latte, cappuccino, frappuccino, misto, mocha, mild and mountain, dark and light or blonde or strong, high test, regular, Swiss water decaffeinated, Kona, Colombian, Kenyan and Brazilian, homebrewed, pressed, perked or dripped, or just from Timmy's. We have more words for coffee than we do for rain. And we have a lot of words for rain. Sometimes coffee shops are used to do informal polls. Recently in London, a coffee shop had people order cappuccino for conservative and latte for labor. But we should never forget that you can't make any of these without coffee. Coffee is the necessary foundational ingredient for all of these. Now, we have as many words for coffee as we do for cars. Some of you know that I'm having to car hunt against my will. Sedan, SUV, compact, Honda, Ford, BMW, 2-liter, 6-cylinder, V8, hatchback, 4-door, coupe, jalopy, sports, luxury, and junker are just a few that I have learned the last few days. But all of them have four wheels without which they are not a car. But we have only a few words for love, this essential thing in our lives. And so we say we love coffee. We love our cars, using the same word that we use for our lovers, our children, our mothers, our fathers, our land, our God. And it's the same word that we use for God's love for us. Now, you may have heard that there are four Greek words for love. That's not quite true. There's actually more than that. But there are four that are in the New Testament. Eros, erotic love, storge, family love, philia, the powerful friendship between people that brings them together, and agape love, the great mysterious love that goes beyond human understanding but not beyond human possibility. This meal that we have shared is often called the agape meal, and sometimes we call it the love feast. Long ago, the people of the church in Corinth wrote to Paul to ask him for help. Their community was divided. People weren't sure what the new rules were if you were a Christian. Could you eat with people who were Christian but not Jewish? How about people who weren't either? They had no official priesthood, and they wanted to know who was in charge, who's more important, the person who serves or the one who prophesies. One who speaks in the tongues of angels, we call that speaking in tongues, or the one who heals the sick. And Paul wants them to look far beyond that. And he writes to them, I will tell you of a more excellent way. And then he tells them to think in terms of agape, not storge, family love, or philia, powerful friendship, certainly not eros, which was a highly suspicious thing in ancient Greece. But agape love, the love that is beyond the lines of family or friendship or race or even power or talents. Paul is writing in Greek for an audience that speaks many languages. Greek is the language of the Roman Empire, strangely, the way English is our shared language. But he's also thinking in Hebrew. And he's talking about a love also described in Hebrew by the prophets. It's called chesed, the love of God on which the world hangs together, the love that is the organizing principle of the universe. And he remembers these words, though the mountains be shaken and the hills be removed, yet my unfailing chesed for you will not be shaken, nor my covenant of peace be removed, says Yahweh, who has compassion on you. The words of Isaiah. Chesed is often translated in the Bible as loving kindness or steadfast love or unfailing love. But it is more than that. It is the love on which God's covenants are based. This passage about love from Paul is often read at weddings, and in that context it sounds rather sweet, almost saccharine. And reading it at weddings puts it within the context of the others, eros or storge, but the intention is in fact to look far beyond those, to include those within agape. Agape or chesed is the love on which the others depend. We love because God first loved us. It is not a love that depends on eros or on proximity or on alliances or race or religion. There is another word, by the way, that as I was researching this, I rather liked. It is a word for love. It's pragma. And it is the love of people who have been together a long time. Paul is basing his comments on the stories of Jesus. And in the one we read today, Jesus is in the synagogue in his hometown. And they hear him read the words of Isaiah, and they are really impressed. I mean, this is just Joseph's son, right? So they say to him, okay, do some miracles for us. We hear you do miracles, do some miracles for us. And then he tells them that the miracles are not just for them. The message isn't just for them. It's not just for Jews. Not just for the people of Nazareth. He speaks of miracles and prophets of other ages and how they were sent to the poor. And they came to the others, people who weren't Jews. How the chesed love of God is extended past the family, past the near friendships of a small community, even past the usual barriers. And they are righteously angry. And I was going to use a different word for angry, but it's church. Jesus expands the definition of neighbor, but he also lets them know that sometimes they are not going to be the ones who receive. They are beloved, but that doesn't always mean they will receive while others don't. Sometimes they must be pleased that God has helped someone else who is in need, the poor widow who's outside their community, just like the one Elijah was sent to. And they are not happy. They were so angry they tried to throw Jesus off a cliff. Sometimes, I am reminded, it is not about me. Rarely. But sometimes it is not about me. Sometimes someone else needs to receive. Sometimes the world just isn't fair. We're happy to give and give charity when it's easy. And by the way, charity comes from the word caritas, which is the Latin word for agape. But it's easy when we have enough, or more than enough. And it's really hard when we don't think that even though we have enough, it's quite as much as we deserve. And I'm reminded of a woman who was begging on a street corner and who came over to give me a quarter when she saw me desperately looking in my purse for parking money, and then refused my offer of a loonie in exchange in case I thought that was the only reason she had offered. She didn't want me to think that she only gave me the quarter in expectation of something more. And I'm reminded of taking a group of youth to ask for cans of food for the food bank just before Halloween and going to various houses. And the poorest houses gave the most, and from the richest houses, the children were sent empty away. They were shouted at and told to leave. Paul warns, "For now we see but in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face." We can tend to see God as a reflection of ourselves, and if ourselves are small of heart and narrow in wisdom and selfish in thought, we may see God that way too. In fact, it's only when we know that God is greater than us that we might actually feel guilty, because we can see that God is greater and calls us to something more. Now we know only in part, a reflection. but we are instead a reflection of God. Our loves are a reflection of agape. Our family love is a reflection of that. And when we go beyond into a friendship that extends beyond the people we like, then we are approaching that agape. When we extend it to people we don't even know, that's actually often easier. My goodness, they don't actually impinge on us, really. But sometimes that extension is also a reflection of agape, moving into something else. Now I know only in part, then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known. And now, faith, hope, and love abide, these three, and the greatest of these is love. May we always remember this. Amen.